I'm Frank Vaughn. It's August 22nd, 2026. And there are times in my life where I have blind spots. And I don't mind admitting them. One of my blind spots is that as a decent human being, I have a lot of empathy and a lot of feeling for the suffering of other people. Not just overseas, but right here at home. Even if that suffering is a result of their own choices. I'm never entirely cold. Some people have accused me of that in my time. I'm a big believer that people are responsible for their own states and that oftentimes they arrive where they are by choice and that we shouldn't go light on them for making those choices, but it doesn't kill or diminish my ability to feel for their suffering, even if there's nothing I can do about it, because the analogy I've used before is that if you see a drowning man or a captain of a ship who just sank his ship and he's drowning in the water, and you offer him a branch to pull him to shore, and he refuses the branch, instead insisting that you give him your sparkly new boat, you don't give him the boat. You keep offering the branch, and you weep as he drowns, and you save the boat for someone else who can sail it. Now late last night, late on a Friday, the bad news always drops late on Fridays when it's being framed as something bold by Mark Carney. Of course, I'm talking about the interrupted trade negotiations and the impending trade war with the United States. If he really wanted to be brave and bold about it, it would have came out before markets closed. Now, I want to say at the outset, I'm still not convinced that this feud between Mark Carney and Trump is 100% real. But I do have to go backwards several months to during the election, when I talked about how the Trump administration highlighted things about Canada that were very real. They have a massive organized crime problem. It's not just the Vancouver model that laundered drug proceeds through housing and helped to inflate home values in this country and pushed affordability of homes out of reach for most Canadians, but it's the drug problem. It's the manufacturing problem. We've had massive drug lab busts. We've had massive drug busts on our borders. And the streets are still littered with people who are, I don't want to call them victims because everybody makes a choice. Our streets are still littered with addicts who make a choice every day to continue being addicted. And it is a choice. I get so sick of the mealy-mouse society that we're living in that would deprive. Because the one thing that an addict who is living on the street still has is agency. And the idea that society is responsible or that their choice is not ultimately responsible for where they are robs them of that agency. You'd think they'd defend it. But then again, nothing ever really seems to make sense to me. I digress. He highlighted a massive problem with Canada and organized crime. We are a country built on organized crime. And in the past, I have made very detailed analytical reports talking about that. If you go through my portfolio of videos, you'll find there's a series of thumbnails where I'm wearing a helmet and I'm holding a sword and I'm just looking kind of funny. They stand out, but it's a whole series on this problem and how it's internationally recognized that Canada is a clearinghouse for narco trafficking in the world, responsible for delivering most of Australia's methamphetamine. How does that even happen? So Trump was right to highlight that. The other thing that the Trump administration was very correct about is that Canada is the primary beneficiary of our trade arrangement. People like to talk about oil and how oil is channeled to the United States and how they pay a discount for our oil and how horrible that is and how we should get our oil to Tidewater so that we can sell it to other players in the world. These things aren't bad ideas on their own. It's just that Canada can't build a pipeline because we're not a serious country. Sometimes my own words hit me and I have to pause like I just did to actually digest what's coming out of my mouth. I can't believe the things I have to say sometimes. Canada is also a nation of cartels, not just illegal cartels, but legalized, supported by the state. We love supply management, whether it's dairy, maple syrup, a dozen other industries, probably way more than a dozen other industries. We place strict limitations. We talk about free trade, but we place strict limitations on the number and amount of goods that can come into Canada from other countries to protect our industries. And you can be okay with that, or you can be against that. That's not the issue. It's never been the issue for me. When it came to the subject of trade, Canada went ridiculous when it came to our response to the idea of the Americans charging us tariffs in the first place. That's how we arrived at this 50% tariff in the first place, is that we had this outsized reaction where we had the Premier of Ontario threatening to cut off power to 1.5 million Americans over tariffs, which we charge the world. We are one of the hardest jurisdictions in the Western world to actually do business with. We make everybody jump through hoops. And then once you get here, once you get into Canada with your goods, say you want to set up shop here with a business, say you want to bring your capital here and you want to actually invest, well, then you have to deal with all the regulatory nonsense, which is why we have been experiencing capital flight for a very long time. We're losing investment. We're losing businesses because other jurisdictions are friendlier. But back to the point, we love our cartels. One of the biggest issues is that American dairy cannot get on Canadian store shelves. And people are fine with that. They say, we got to protect Canadian dairy. But there's a contradiction here. Dairy farmers are among the wealthiest farmers in this country because of the supply management system. We all pay more for milk because of the supply managed system. When there's too much supply, the farmers that are part of that system have to dump that supply down the drain. Now, we hear liberals talking all the time about food insecurity in this country. And yet we dump hundreds of millions of liters of milk down the drain to maintain an artificially high price, higher price, in butter, milk, and dairy products. Whether you like it or not, whether you support it or not, that's what Canada does. We are not a nation built on the principle of free trade. We never have been. We maintain price levels across a broad range of industries through regulatory power and cartels. The other thing I just want to talk about for a second is this idea of supply safety. I prefer Canadian dairy because it doesn't have growth hormone in the dairy. And people mistakenly assume that if we remove supply management, all of a sudden the Canadian market would be flooded with American dairy products that contain that hormone, and that supply management keeps that out of our system. It's wrong. It's actually the Canadian Food Inspection Agency and relevant legislation that regulates the presence or non-presence of hormone in our dairy. It has nothing to do with supply management at all. We could have increased American dairy products in Canada and force them to only sell into Canada those dairy products that contain no hormone. It would lock out a big number of American businesses. They'd have to retool if they wanted access to the Canadian market. But that's a different story. Keeping American dairy out inevitably increases the price that Canadians pay to protect our dairy industry, whether you agree with it or not. That's the reality. It's been a big problem for the United States. And when you, as I've done in the past, when you do a point-by-point comparison with our trade arrangement with the United States, Canada does indeed have very favorable conditions, probably the most favorable trade conditions in the world with the United States. We have won in the past. And the Trump administration highlighted that we've won in the past and also highlighted the fact that Canada has been thumbing our nose and looking down on the United States and judging them to the point of, during the last election, openly making statements that would seemingly interfere or try to interfere with an American election outcome. And they wanted to hold us accountable for that. And I totally agree with all of those things. When it comes to this dispute, I think we're a bunch of ingrates in Canada. I genuinely do. I think we're not very realistic at all. I think we're not thankful. I mean, another issue that comes up is defense. We depend on the United States for defense. They are the reason our military can sit denuded and we can rest in security, because the American nuclear and conventional umbrella protects us. And you could say that we need to do something about that, but subs that won't get delivered until 2035 are not going to fix that problem right away. It's a very complicated problem. I've highlighted it before on this channel. But at the very least, we should be thankful for these things. Instead, and it's almost too stupid to imagine, we are belligerent. We are arrogant. We reveal the emptiness of so-called Canadian politeness. And I'm not talking about the government here. I'm talking about the people. The majority of the people in this country, this is how we conduct ourselves and this is how we behave. We bite the hand that feeds. And of course, the government is taking advantage of that. Remember what I said. I'm still not convinced that Trump and Carney and the King are not all doing something together in coordination. It seems to me that it's obvious there is a global attack on energy infrastructure and food supply. It's hard to ignore. And we're going to be looking at those things in more detail as we go forward, particularly wheat. But that doesn't mean that the broad base of public support that enables the Carney government to do what it's about to do to Canada shouldn't take their share of the blame for what's about to happen. It's pain. Canadians are going to suffer. We're going to suffer big time. We don't have the resilience. We're just a nation of dependency. And I'm going to show you how. We don't have the resilience built into the country to actually weather the storm that Carney is triggering. But the majority of the country is applauding this every step of the way. The elbows up crowd is going to love this trade war. And they may love it while they start to feel the losses. We might be that far gone. Now, I just want you to understand a couple things. I just asked some simple questions to Google. Comprehensive breakdown of the reserves of the Bank of Canada. Note, strictly speaking, Canada's official international reserves are legally held in the name of the Minister of Finance rather than directly by the Bank of Canada. Okay. Malarkey. The only thing you need to look at is this is what backstops the Canadian dollar. 71% reserves of U.S. dollars. That's what we hold. We hold U.S. dollars. We don't hold gold. We don't hold silver. We don't hold commodities. We hold 71% U.S. dollars. And then we hold the euro. Who backstops the euro? U.S. dollars. The British pound sterling? Who backstops the British pound? Now, admittedly, there is some gold buying that's going on in the central banks, but the whole Western world is built on the U.S. dollar system. That's the first thing you need to know. So while we are engaged in a trade war, which is going to hurt us far more than the United States, are we trying to make a contribution to all of the headwinds to try and take out the Trump administration? Maybe. But honestly, I don't know why there is this collective understanding that there is a conspiracy between the Europeans and the Canadians to undermine Donald Trump when Donald Trump is largely doing the bidding of the foreign policy of neocons, which isn't out of step or out of line with globalist thinking. We are not getting out of the Trump administration the assault on globalism that we would expect. Yesterday, there was a rally in South Carolina, and a man stood up in the crowd and he was wearing, how would I say it appropriately, to avoid the algorithm, saying that people who do bad things with children should be put out of their misery. And he stood up and he made a big commotion and Trump had to pause, and it's just, you know, protest stuff. But there's been no Epstein justice. And for those of you who think that the cover-up of Epstein is not an indication of Trump's loyalties at this point, and the cover-up by his administration. The people who were behind Epstein had connections in every part of the world. He had residences in Europe. What UK politicians have been taken down by their association with Epstein? None of them have been charged. Prince Andrew, Mandelson. There's other figures in Europe who have flown under the radar so far. There are people out there who want to tell you that the city of London runs everything and that somehow the United States and Israel are the revolution against the city. It's an inversion of reality. But I've said a lot about Trump's foreign policy on this channel. So I'm not really sure, you know, maybe it's not WEF branded, maybe it's not UN branded, but the agenda is moving forward. Flock cameras, Palantir, the invasion of American privacy, the destruction of the US dollar, which is imminent, which our economy in Canada is built upon. What percentage of the Canada Pension Plan assets are held in US-based interests? Again, simple question you can ask Google. 51% are held in the United States. The next closest is Asia Pacific. That's not just China. That's everywhere in Asia at 17%. So the future of the Canada Pension Plan is tied to the prosperity of the United States. Now, that's our so-called private pension plan. It's actually a tax. Our courts have, or like, I keep coming up with people saying CPP is not a tax. The court's already decided that CPP is a tax. You can't get out of it. If you make $20,000 and that's all you make to your name, you may not pay federal income tax and you may not pay provincial income tax, but you're going to pay something in the neighborhood if you're self-employed. And even if you're not self-employed, because even though this is how there's so many things I could get into here. At source deduction pisses me off to no end, because if you as a wage worker, wage earner, touched all of your money and held it in your hand before you had to cut a check to give it to the government, you would care a hell of a lot more about where those taxes are going. But they've removed your agency. So the money's already gone at source before you get it. And it's the same with CPP. Half is paid by your employer. It's actually you that's paying it. It's coming out of your wage, but you don't see it. But even at that, it's still 6% of a wage earner's money up to, I think, $79,000 threshold is going to CPP, and there's no way for you to get out of it. It starts after you've made $3,500. So your first $3,500 is free and clear, and then after that, you're paying 12%, even if you don't see 6 of it. If you're self-employed, you see it all. If you're self-employed, you get to see all of your money. It gets to sit in your hands, and then you have to write a check to the government every year. And when you feel that, you care a lot more. Anyway, the CPP is dependent on the prosperity of the United States. The Bank of Canada and the Canadian dollar is built upon the US dollar. We don't even have that large reserves. We got like $180 billion in reserves, of which most of it is US dollars. We run a $100 billion deficit in this country. What backstops Canada's old age security program? The answer is nothing. It's funded directly from the federal budget rather than a dedicated pool of individual contributions. General revenues, unlike the CPP, which is funded by employee and employer contributions into an invested fund, OAS is non-contributory program paid directly from general federal tax revenues. Where do those tax revenues come from? Economic activity. What underpins economic activity in Canada? The US dollar. What inhibits the building and deployment of economic activity in Canada to generate those tax revenues? Our regulatory regimes at the border that keep competition out, as well as our high tax carbon cult environment inside Canada's borders. That's why capital is getting out. The things the government has done, the things the Ford government did. Remember when not even an American company, I can't remember the name of the company right now. I think it's tied to Seagram's, but I could be wrong. Liquor. All they wanted to do was move a bottling plant from Ontario to the United States. And Doug Ford came out, and this was a business decision. This was about keeping their business viable. These people, this company, which is a British company, it still operates all around Canada, employing lots of Canadians. But because they wanted to make this one business decision to keep their business viable, Ford said, I will pull all of your products off the store shelves if you close that plant. And at the time that it happened, I said, what kind of a signal does this send to the moneyed interests in the world about the dangers of investing in Canada? It's like the Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave. Once your capital's in here, the government feels the right, has the right, to dictate how your capital is deployed or whether or not you can get it back out. And Doug Ford was signaling he was willing to use the government's power to do that. See, Canada is built on trust. The whole concept of this country's trust. Your civil liberties and your Charter of Rights and Freedoms only apply if you trust the state, because the state can take them away anytime they want. You have no property rights in Canada, so everything you own, you don't really own. So the government can come along and take your property away, from plastic straws to firearms, whenever the hell they want, because you don't really own anything in this country. And that scales all the way up to your home. Look at the title issues that they're having in BC. I mean, I hold so many of these truths to be self-evident. I can't even believe I can have to talk about them, and it's hard for me to believe that the vast majority of Canadians can't acknowledge these things. How an attack and a trade war with the United States, how not making a deal with them is maybe the biggest cell phone in Canadian history as regards the people and their future prospects. Another question anyone can ask Google. How much trade does Canada do with the USA as a percent of our economy? One third, about 30% to 35% of Canada's entire economy, our entire GDP, with the United States. I keep encountering people online who claim we can replace it by doing more business with Europe and China. It can't happen. The United States cannot be replaced because they're right there, they're right beside us. But there's also the implications of what it means to do business and become dependent on very strong military powers like China, who view Canada as a colony, or India, who the Modi government has come out and said that they view emigration as a tool of foreign policy. So sending their millions of people into other nations as a tool of India's foreign policy. Voluntarily lining up to become a colony of great powers. What kind of a destiny is that? If we're going to do that, let's do it with the United States, not India or China. Are you kidding me? Has anybody even seen India? The place, it's a glorified failed state. Basic sanitation doesn't exist. There's garbage everywhere. Much like a lot of neighborhoods in Canada are becoming garbage-filled dumps. And the elbows-up idiots love every single second of it. And people like me who are trying to warn you about, or warn them about the impending destruction of things like their pensions, showed a video the other day of a bunch of boomers singing songs as they're going to knock on doors about liberals. What are you going to do when your retirement disappears? It's not like somewhere down the road now. We're getting right to it. This isn't me sounding the alarm like I was 5 or 6 years ago about, or even, I mean, I started talking about these themes in 2016 and 2015, that we were coming to an inflection point in history, which would change everything. But it's no longer 10 years in the future. It's right here, within reach. The great promise of Fortress North America was Canadians and Americans having the sense to see that the old world didn't have our interests at heart and that we needed to come together continentally to provide to the world all kinds of goods, to get filthy rich, to build our infrastructure, to do these wonderful things together. I believe there's two pathways. There is this nationally centric or continentally centric, dare I say, selfish play, where we could do it on our own. But there's also an integrationist path, which is very much in alignment with the goals and outcomes desired by globalism. Integration is the future. And the more I see the world, and the more I see the foreign policy of the United States, and the more I see what Carney's doing, the more convinced I am that, or not, convinced is the wrong word. I feel like everybody is working towards the same objective. I don't know if all the players know they're working towards that objective, but we're not taking the good path. We're not taking the self-focused path, which, you know, it's okay to recognize that you can't save the world if your own country is in shambles, that you can't worry about the domestic situation in your neighbor's house if your own house is falling apart. You have to fix the home front first before you can do good to the world, for the world. And that's the selfish path. Fixing yourself before you try to fix others. And I just don't see us taking that path. On screen, the bond market is going to burst the stock market bubble. But I think the image is the more disconcerting thing. Because the image to me is the pinprick of the bubble of the US dollar. The US dollar's impending decline. I shouldn't even say impending decline. It's already in decline. The world central banks now hold more gold than they hold US treasuries. The United States is having a really hard time selling treasury bonds, even at 5%, high fours. Now they're talking about moving to 6%. People aren't buying U.S. government debt. They're a little gun shy. And if the United States cannot fund its $2 trillion deficits, what do you think happens? That's $1 trillion in new debt every 6 months. What do you think happens to the U.S. dollar? I think it can happen so fast. There's a lot of people who put timelines out there of years. I think once you cross a certain inflection point, it will happen quick. The infrastructure is already being built by China, and they have beautiful modern airports, beautiful modern cities. They're clean, largely crime-free, newly built. China's fairly ascendant. There is this idea that the war in Iran is hurting China more than anything, and it's all this Machiavellian 5D chess to isolate China. Meanwhile, while the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve is continuing to get drained because the myth of 10 million barrels of oil coming out of the Persian Gulf is just that, it's a myth. The Trump administration engages in this mass-scale storytelling. The Chinese are calmly adding to their petroleum reserve, all while the Pacific lies undefended. But I'm not trying to pick on the United States here. If the U.S. dollar bubble bursts, if the United States can't fill its treasury auction quotas anymore, what do you think happens to Canada? And into this mix, Canada's not buying gold. We're not nationalizing our gold mines or our silver production. They still largely, in many cases, are dominated or at least heavily influenced by the interests of foreign actors. We have high volume of foreign ownership in Canada. We're not taking any proactive measures to build resilience against the failure of the U.S. dollar. No. Canada is actively trying to do its part to make sure the U.S. dollar fails. And when the U.S. dollar fails, because we've built a nation on the back of the United States, Canada fails. And when we fail, the pension system fails, the economy fails, the people who are going to, I mean, it's going to be the majority of people because you just have to look at the polling numbers, the people who are going to cheer this trade war are going to be among the first casualties in this trade war. And at the end of the day, the people who are united under the Goldman Sachs, Brookfield, very pro-America throughout his career, Prime Minister Mark Carney, are not just going to lose the most, they're going to end up leading Canada into an economic position where what little sovereignty we actually have is going to further erode, and we will become whole hog the colony of other more powerful nations. And that's the sad reality. They think they're saving the country. By following this course of action, we will weaken whatever resilience we have left, and we're going to end up being carved up and dominated anyway. And Carney will be sitting atop the heap to manage that process. What can I do about it? I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.